Welcome, welcome, welcome. See, you thought I was dead today. Everybody thought I was dead. So everybody thought I was low energy. I was Jeb Bush low energy.
He's back.
We started rolling this.
There you go.
We called your name and you came out onto the podium.
Okay, so it's another thrilling, exciting episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. As always, we have Bill Bregoli.
On 2 hours sleep.
And we have Bill McCuddy.
I'm wearing pants.
And we have a special guest who's joined us before. We have Justine Browning.
I'm looking at Bill McCuddy's socks.
There you go. Bill always wears
They're
interesting
Pac-Man.
Socks. If you want to actually see Bill McCuddy's socks, you can see them on... Well, we'll tell you that in a moment. First, let me tell you what's coming up on the show today.
Send $5 to Post Office Box.
We're going to talk about this new Michael Moore film called Where to Invade Next, where Spectre is on demand, the latest James Bond film that's also on DVD. We're going
to
talk about all these other... how that compares to all the other canon of 007 films. We're going to look at some movies that are also on demand and on DVD, like 99 Homes and Grandma and Tumble Down. And we're also going to talk about some Super Bowl commercials that featured movie stars. As I was saying about Bill McCuddy's socks, this is the after show to a television show that we do called Talking Pictures, which airs locally in New York on New York One and airs nationally on Time Warner Cable. And the premise of that show, which is not necessarily the premise of this show all the time, but more that show, is with 300 movies on demand in your cable box
at any
given time. Most people are only familiar with a couple of titles, and we take a look at all the hidden gems and gold, the little nuggets that are in there. And as Bill McCuddy always says...
We watch the bad movies so you don't have to.
That's true. And speaking about movies, bad or good, Michael Moore, the filmmaker, documentarian, funny filmmaker who made such movies as Roger and Me and Sicko and Bowling for Columbine.
Bowling for Columbine.
Has a new movie out, and it is called Where to Invade Next. And who wants to explain what this movie is all about?
I'd happily do that.
Go ahead.
So Michael Moore does a mock invasion of countries in Europe and North Africa that he jokingly wants to steal aspects of for the U.S. He's kind of picking the flowers. And as he notes, many of these ideas were actually grown here. So it's kind of almost a travel brochure in many ways. He goes to Iceland, which is actually leading in the world in terms of women's rights. He goes to Germany, which in terms of healthcare and workers' rights is doing incredible. And Slovenia.
Slovenia.
Lovely, picturesque Slovenia.
Rivals the U.S., so it's very, very interesting in that regard.
Well, you know, it made me feel like I want to move to Italy or France after watching this film. I mean, France, the school lunches for kids look like gourmet five-star restaurants in New York.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 8 weeks vacation in Italy, and, you know, in Iceland, they put the bankers away for rooting the economy instead of getting bailed out like they did here in the 2008 housing burst, and the prisons in Norway are like
spas.
You know, yeah, they are spas, and it looks like a kinder, gentler world.
You get a different kind of facial at this Norwegian.
Oh my goodness!
Well, it is a one-sided kind of documentary in the sense that he tells you like, look how great it is in Italy. You know, everybody's getting 8 weeks vacation, and then he doesn't tell you that the unemployment rate is at 50% in Italy presently. So you know,
I talked to him about this because I've been to a couple of Q&As. He invited me to a party at his house that, you know, where he showed the movie and then he had people talk about it. And a lot of people asked that same question, Neil. And he said, in Italy, for example, that would be up to an Italian documentary filmmaker to talk about what's wrong with the Italian system. His job is to go over there and say, if I could cherry pick, as you said so well, or skim the cream off the top or pick the flowers, I would take this from this country and that from that country. And so, it's a best of hits. And it is kind of interesting that in some of these cases, they ripped our ideas off and then made them better over there, and we just want them back.
Well, I like the movie. I mean, I think it's interesting. I mean, as I said, you know—
I think it's his funniest movie in a long time.
I like this Michael Moore, too. He's less abrasive.
He's much more optimistic, you know.
Kinder, gentler.
Yes.
The thing is, sorry to cut you off. Neil and I have talked about this a lot because we're both from the Bronx, and the school system— I don't know how it was for you, but we've talked about this, is pretty abysmal. And that chunk of the film, for me personally, I thought was really, really well done, kind of the unacceptable, not just the cafeteria food that they bring to the French children.
Well, the cafeteria.
And they look at it.
My high school, I went to Christopher Columbus High School in the Bronx on Pelham Park, which no longer exists.
No longer exists, but before it even closed down was like a cesspool of crime, ambulances and cops.
Right, but when I went there, it was great. Great.
Well, Neil, you ran a gang, right?
It was a great high school. I mean, but we're talking about, you know, the mid-70s, and in that particular era, I mean, when I got to college, I actually was bored in some classes because we covered the covered that curriculum in high school. So I'm saying that, you know, things changed, but the food was never good in any of the schools, be it my elementary school, my junior high school, or my high school. I mean, Robert Klein, the comedian, used to do a bit on, you know, school lunches that they would have, you know, Yankee beans and Frank's, because this was the stuff that India rejected. I mean, they didn't even want our school lunches, and they would feed it to our kids. And, you know, you're watching this movie, and they're feeding these French kids. I mean, it was, there's all these kinds of cheese. The Camembert is the favorite cheese of our students.
Well, it starts on a tight shot, and you don't really realize they're in a school. And then you think they're in a restaurant, and then it pulls back, and they're not only are they in a school, they're in a public school.
And then they go to and I don't want you to think that this is just, I'm going to a high-end school. Let's go to the worst neighborhood in France with, you know, and they're still eating, you know, great. So
he offers them a Coca-Cola, and they vomit. I mean, they don't want
the Coca-Cola.
Everything. Yeah.
We cut you off. So.
No. Do they have wine there at the school?
I don't think it's that progressive.
The interesting irony this week from Michael Moore is he was supposed to do press for this movie, but he was hospitalized last week with pneumonia.
Yeah.
And after his whole thing on healthcare, I hope he's enjoying some good
healthcare. Well, he's back in the news in such a big way because of Flint, which he chronicled 25 years ago in Roger and Me. And, of course, we've known for a while that they're not doing very well. And just shows you the significance of that film. A lot of his films, years later, Bowling for Columbine now means something so different because we've had so many more instances like Columbine since that film came out. So I think that's an interesting thing.
I like the movie. You know, it is a one-sided thing, but if we just took some of these ideas and applied them, I mean, you know, what would be wrong with that? I mean,
a two-sided Michael Moore movie.
Yeah, well, that's true.
That's his wonk. That's what he does.
Though, is his, I think well, it's his most optimistic movie.
Well,
and the part to me that really stuck out, the drug war in Portugal, the fact
nobody goes to jail there for possession of drugs.
And here, now I have to recommend another documentary that's a great companion to this called The House I Live In, and that's really about the prison system, the way that people are put away for minor drug offenses, nonviolent offenses, sometimes for life, and it's some note a different form of slavery. And here he touches on that a little. We see a lot of, he makes that argument to a degree. We see a lot of different footage that supports that. And I think just the way that Portugal's thrived since ending their drug war is really important.
What country does he go to where all higher education is free?
That's a ton of them, but Slovenia is the one where a lot of Americans are now going.
Now, I went to a city college and a state university, and I didn't pay for college. I mean, it was just like a, you know, registration.
I think we were aware of that on the show.
SUNY Binghamton was very cheap, but the point being, that's a good idea. I mean, who are we screwing here in our country?
Bernie Sanders wants that. This is like Bernie Sanders' campaign movie in a way.
Yeah, but I mean, really, I mean, it's like by making it unaffordable for the future of our kids in our country to go to school.
It's a disguised form of indentured servitude in many ways.
But who are we screwing
by
not giving them education?
Cities are unaffordable for a lot of people. So
I think by giving kids a free education, I mean, we're investing in our own country's future. So if you take, you know, maybe you wouldn't be able to employ, to carry out these ideas to the fullest extent, but if you take little germinations of these ideas that Michael Moore presents in the movies and you do them, he also has this thing about women, that women should be running the world.
Makes a pretty good argument.
So it makes some missteps. I see what you're saying, but
I'm living with my wife and daughter for a long time. Women have been running my life for a long time.
The argument is that it should be an equal number of men and women running the banks because that makes almost equal number, and that makes things run smoother. That was his point.
Yeah,
not one versus the other.
Well, you know, free healthcare was another thing that he touches upon in the movie. You know, it's a worthwhile documentary, and I think that it's worth taking a look at if you like Michael Moore, and we wish Michael Moore a speedy recovery. He is in bad shape. shape. He has pneumonia. And there were some other documentaries that were on demand that we talked about on the show this week. I like this documentary, which kind of... plays out of this one, called The Emperor's New Clothes, which is a pretty new movie, which is with Russell Brand. Did you see this, Bill?
Yeah.
Where he kind of, it's kind of like a Big Short kind of thing, but it's about why it looks at the economic inequality between the 1% and the 99%, and it's Michael Winterbottom directs it, and Russell Brand, the comedian, kind of narrates it, and he's in it, and I think it's pretty funny. I mean, you know, he talks about how this all started, you know, how Reagan with the antitrust thing went into play, and all of a sudden there were these mega mergers, and the middle class started... and even though this takes place in England, I think it's a parable for what's going on in this country as well. What do you think?
I'm a big fan of Michael Winterbottom anyway, and the idea that he got Russell Brand, of all people, to do this, I just like. And then I recently saw another documentary on Russell Brand that we talked about a few weeks ago. And I don't know if people really buy him because they see him as a well-paid performer. And now he's talking about... the economy,
which
and
he does address. He does address that he is one of the
He has made himself over as sort of the kind of a British Michael Moore, and trying to get up on a soapbox. I tell you, I said this on the show. A little Russell Brand goes a long way. I know him through TM, and I, you know, I'm a fan of his comedic work, except Arthur. But you know, I think that he's this is a movie, and we say this all the time on the show, that could have been defined by a 15 or 20 minute piece and doesn't need to be this.
I liked it. I don't agree. I found it very interesting, and I mentioned The Big Short earlier. I mean, I think this, which was kind of a tutorial, I think this is funnier and more explain. He explains this whole problem that we're having. You know, in a more understandable way than The Big Short did. The Big Short, as opposed to the, here's Margot Robbie to explain to you about the house, you know, that we...
In a bubble bath, for sure.
Right, in a bubble bath in The Big Shorter. Here's Selena Gomez, you know, in a casino to...
Well, you're right. I didn't want to see Russell Brand in a bubble bath.
Although you in Arthur, you did.
Yes, yeah, sadly.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I think what that movie and this have in common, and even Michael Moore's style, if you incorporate that in, is that it's taking... very large concepts, macabre concepts in a lot of ways, macabre realities, and making them accessible to a mainstream audience. You know, midway through the movie, there's a shot of this bustling Apple store in central London, and the image is juxtaposed with the suicide nets outside the factory in China. And that's pretty hard to stomach. But again, the way that he executes, you know, combining Michael Winterbottom's style with his hilarious antics on the streets of London, I think the message, you know, is easier to swallow. And... you know, he makes fun of himself. I do love, at one point, this is my favorite quote from the movie, they say in order to be happy, he determines, in order to be happy, you have to be either a child, mentally ill, or a daytime TV host. I've been all three. And I thought that was a great moment. And also, he's inclusive of so many different types of people, you know, children, people with disabilities. And the interviews are conducted with such empathy when he's sitting with these people. He's going into their homes. He's highlighting all different aspects of...
You're right, Bill. He is trying to reinvent himself. I mean, this is the guy from Get Him to the Greek, you know, which he's great in, and now he's doing these kind of things.
This is also the director from The Trip and The Trip to Italy with Rob and...
Good movies.
And the Coogan, Steve Coogan. Better movies. Rather see those.
Well, I don't know. I think it's interesting. I liked it.
The other part where he's driving through an impoverished town in Angola, and he's illustrating the class divide with facts and figures, and they all have these outrageous, creepy masks on, you know, and the facts and figures. I thought that was a very powerful image to get that information across with this moment in the film that I think is very impactful.
So there's a couple other documentaries up there. There's Citizen 4, the Edward Snowden thing. Did you see that, Bill?
I think it plays out like a thriller. I said on the show that people who want to see documentaries will like this, because it's, you know, it's history unfolding in front of us, I think, as one of our colleagues pointed out. And I think it's important and needs to be seen.
We're going to talk about, and Justine did not see this movie, which is my fault. I did not send her a link to this movie, but I want to talk about this movie. It's called Tumble Down, and it's on
I don't know. You didn't send me a link either.
I didn't send Bill Rowe, but Bill and I saw it. I'm going to talk about it.
Well, I think we were smart to spare the other two.
I think
they will send us a thank you note if for any reason they're ever surfing around and watch this movie by mistake.
Well, here's what it's about. I mean, Rebecca Hall is living in Maine, and she's kind of can't get past the fact her husband, who was a acclaimed folk singer, died several years earlier, and she can't move past
it. He tumbled down.
Right. He did tumble down. He fell off.
He was rock climbing.
That's correct. He tumbled down, hence the title of the film. And
nothing metaphoric about it. It's just called Tumble Down.
Right. No. And Jason Sudeikis is a professor at Hofstra University in Long Island, New York, who lives in New York City. And he was a big fan of her husband, and he's writing a book and wants to talk to her about getting secrets about the guy's life. And it turns out that book is abandoned, and they decide they're going to collaborate on a biography together about her husband.
But she'll have none of it. So these two will never get together. It's impossible.
Right. And we have in a supporting cast, we have Blythe Danner, who plays Rebecca Hall's mother.
Richard Mazur, who plays the father.
That's correct. And Joe, how do you pronounce his name? Manganiello, who's Sofia Vergara's husband in real life, and he's also from Magic Mike XXL.
Yeah.
He's
the beefcake.
Defining a man by
right. So... I think
you've had a good influence on us.
I think Sudeikis gets off some snappy one-liners every once in a while, but the problem
two.
And it's watchable for a while, but the ending is a complete betrayal to the audience because there is no way that these two people they barely even like each other, and all of a sudden they hook up and they're professing their love to each other. I mean, it's so poorly written by this first-time writer director Sean Mushaw, who I think just said, okay, I'm doing the genre of romance or light romantic comedy, and I guess I have to get these characters together, but he doesn't construct it that way, and it's really, I was watching this with my wife, and I'm going, this is just so out of left field. Why are these characters?
No chemistry between the two. Skip it. I think we can move on.
All right, we can move on. All right, let's talk about some other movies that are new on demand.
You didn't even see it, and you agree.
And on...
I like that about you.
That are new on demand.
I endorse your
and are
review.
New on... DVD as well. One is a movie called 99 Homes.
Mm-hmm. 99. I had a hard time watching this film because around the time it came out, I was going broke.
Were you evicted?
No, I wasn't, but I was having trouble paying my rent.
Lord.
So watching this film really...
It hit a little close to 99 Homes?
A little close, yes. And Michael Shannon's super intense. So between him and...
Michael Shannon is great.
Michael Shannon's always great. Name a bad Michael Shannon movie.
Michael Shannon...
Superman Returns. Just kidding.
Okay.
But he wasn't the bad part. That's the only one I could think of.
Did you like 99 Homes, Justine?
I say if you want to be driven to drink, pair this movie with The Big Short. Watch both back to back. I think they're great companion pieces. I do. I think it's one of the most gripping opening scenes in any film I've seen in a long time.
We should explain. Andrew Garfield is evicted. His mom is
Laura Dern.
And this guy shows up. Michael Shannon knocks on the door and says, you have 30 minutes to vacate
two
the
minutes.
Premises.
30 minutes. Share.
Well, they
two
give
minutes.
Him a little more time.
Two minutes.
Yeah, it's two. Yeah, it's, yeah.
Gather a couple of things that are important to you and leave.
Yeah. And this is actually how it's done, I guess. And everyone's in denial. I mean, everyone. Imagine if someone knocked on your door and said, you have to leave. Well, no,
absolutely.
There's a misunderstanding here. I talked to the bank today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody talked to the bank today, ma'am or sir, and you've got 2 minutes to leave. I've got a court order here. So Garfield then goes to work for Michael Shannon, and it's...
Right, he becomes the evictor.
Yeah.
He has very little options. He's living at a hotel with his young son and his mom.
And it's an eviction hotel. Everybody in the motel has been evicted. And
right.
What's that line in the beginning? Somebody goes, yeah, we're just going to be here for a couple of days. He goes, yeah, I said that 2 years ago.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's brutal. Unfortunately, the term don't shoot the messenger doesn't apply here because at the end of the movie, it builds to kind of a false ending, and or an unfortunate ending, I think. So it, it other than that, I like always like Shannon. I sort of like Andrew Garfield here.
I think
he was
Shannon is always
on the set,
great.
But I don't want to go into detail.
I think that it's his best performance, probably his best performance to date. He's just so evil, but yet you kind of like there's a charisma about the guy. Mm-hmm. You hate him and you don't despise him. And I think it's certainly Andrew Garfield's best work. There's a great line in the movie delivered by Shannon where it goes, "America doesn't bail out losers, it bails out winners."
Yes.
You know, and just look at Wall Street, you know, and doesn't that say it all? But this writer-director, a guy by the name of Ramin Barani, also through Shannon's speech, you know, does tell you that, yeah, you can blame characters like Shannon's character, who's mm-hmm. a victim of these people, but you could also blame the banks, who, which you see in The Big Short, who should have never given loans to these people in the first place. You could also blame the people to some extent, too, because, you know, they're living beyond their means.
Yeah.
You know, I blame more the banks because, you know, people, you know, if the bank's going to give you a loan, I think you kind of trust the bank. But I think it's better than The Big Short because unlike that movie, which just takes place in, you know, office buildings, you know, in New York and other kind of corporate centers, this one gets you on the ground and shows you the people that are actually being evicted and the people that are doing the evicting. And, you know, unlike Big Short, where I was not invested emotionally in any of the characters, I was really emotionally invested in this particular story.
Well, imagine the huge oversight then on the Oscars part for nominating this instead of 99 Homes.
This is ripping.
99 Homes is so superior to The Big Short, and yet it was left off the Oscar
list.
At all.
Really?
I think Big Short's a much better film. I think this takes a segment of The Big Short.
Christian Bale and
I think
this wasn't promoted enough.
99 Homes.
That's the problem.
Well, actually, they did start promoting it at the end, and Michael Shannon got
to an extent to prestige crowds, but I don't think it's been accessible to them. I think most.
No, it's a good little on-demand rental. It's a great little gem that that should be seen, even though I don't love the ending. It's got some great performances.
I'm with you on the ending. I mean, I think it's a powerful.
The Big Short is, by the way, maybe going to upset at the Oscars.
No way.
Okay, hold on.
No, Spotlight's winning. Look, 99 Homes is powerful, but not subtle, as it looks at the insensitivity, greed, and corruption, and how people benefit off other people's misery. But the film does lose me at the end when it's this crisis of conscience thing, which I'm going, like, I hope they don't go that route. But, of course, they went that route, and I thought that was like a cop-out.
I think the point is, now, I didn't like the ending originally. The more I think about it, the more I like it, because some people are just not cut out to join the, quote, team of winners that are responsible for, as you said, these terrible things happening. I think some people don't have
Well, that's
capability.
Not the part of the ending I'm talking about. I'm talking about the eviction that we see coming from a mile away.
Right,
and that's what I meant by shoot the messenger.
Okay, I'm talking about what you're talking about, Justine.
I'm not talking about the crisis of consciousness. If you're still listening for any reason whatsoever, thank you for staying with us this long. What else is on demand this
Grandma.
Week?
Grandma. Oh, yeah.
Now, here's a movie. This is with Lily Tomlin, and she plays a
grandma.
A lesbian grandma.
Spoiler alert.
The movie opens with her breaking up with her much younger lover, played by Judy Greer. And then her granddaughter shows up at her door says, "I need $620 to get an abortion." And the whole movie, they're kind of like knocking on doors of people that Lily Tomlin knows to get money to pay for the kid's abortion. And, you know, I don't know. Why didn't this? I think this whole movie is really Lily Tomlin's show. I mean,
hilarious.
She's this irascible grandma who always speaks her mind, and she's funny, and she could have easily morphed into a cartoon, you know, character, but she shows vulnerability in the sense that she's scared of her own daughter, played by Marcia Gay Harden, and she also shows sensitivity as well, you know, especially with her ex-lover, Judy Greer, towards the end. I won't give away that plot point. And I credit
and her old
writer
boyfriend,
director.
Sam Elliott.
Well, that's a more interesting story.
Yes.
That might have made it more, you know, she was married to this guy in the movie 30 years ago, and if they focused more on that, it's like, I was like, how did that happen, you know? Apparently she leaves him and doesn't give an explanation. I wanted to know more about
it. And for Sam Neill, it's a good character.
Sam Elliott.
I mean, he usually plays kind of the same guy, and this he was very wounded and very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. He was, and he talks
still
like
with a great
this.
Voice.
Yeah, that's true.
Such Sam great Elliott. One-liners. When she goes in and kicks the ass of the granddaughter.
With the hockey stick? Yeah.
Wow, and he's terrified of her. I thought that was great.
I may get in trouble for saying this, but I love like its courage of conviction when it came to the abortion part of the storyline.
So
why would
I.
you get in trouble for so? Oh, no, whoops.
Just, so, so
sorry, the rest of the country. Okay,
I was actually
New York.
No, I was
safe to say.
No, I was happy that yeah. you know that wasn't the moralizing of whether she should get the abortion or not. There's many.
Bill, Senator Rubio is in the other room and he'd like to speak with you for just a few.
No, I mean the point is, you know, that was not the centerpiece of the movie. The centerpiece was her getting the money for the abortion, and that's something that's never addressed on television at all, and rarely in movies. And you know,
well, the fact that it costs money, the fact that there's this whole hurdle that they have to go through, the protest, right. the people that are protesting outside. It's not a too big a crowd, but still, and the guilt that she has over it, the conflict that she has over it, this young woman.
Well, wait a minute, Lily Tomlin deserves a better movie than this. I'm going to let you guys heap praise on this thing for the whole. It's not that great. It's 80 minutes because, or 85 minutes because they couldn't think of any other thing to do with her. But I think that it should have been a little better written, and it could have been. I think it is all Lily, and the reason it's all Lily is because the story is a little thin and stretches credibility in a couple places.
And did you mention who directed it?
No.
Chris White.
Paul Weitz, that's right. Well, you know, whether you are, you know, pro-life or pro-abortion, the fact of the matter is that there are countless abortions that go on in this country, you know, every day, and that I was glad that did not become the centerpiece of the film. It was like she wants an abortion,
force, though.
She needs the money, and
it's not an abortion movie. Yeah.
No,
it's not obvious.
But I didn't like the girl who played the granddaughter, Julia Garner. I did not believe.
Yeah, she wasn't good.
I did not believe that she was in a person that was in crisis and was upset. You know, I didn't think she was canceled. But I liked the movie. Why didn't that movie do better at the bottom?
I'm shocked Jennifer Lawrence won the Golden Globe. I know over her. I know we've talked about how they're not very legit, but it still was. I knew that was going to happen, but it still was like when you compare the two performances.
Yeah, I mentioned this on the show, how sad I am to see, you know, she's a treasure, Lily Tomlin, and she thought she was going to win something because she keeps going to she's campaigned very hard for it. Mm-hmm. And everyone says, oh, she's the sentimental favorite. All the pundits were like, oh, she'll win the SAG or she'll win this or she'll win that. Something. And she hasn't won anything so far.
Well, I don't know. That was my question, is like, why did they overlook her in pretty much all the awards? She got shut out of the awards. She's been around for.
She got nominated.
Like,
that shutout means you didn't get nominated.
She didn't get nominated for an Oscar.
She didn't get nominated for an Oscar, but she's been nominated for a bunch of.
Maybe
you know,
the Indie Spirit
Awards. I like Lily Tomlin in this movie, and I've liked her in other movies, but I never found her characters, Edith Ann and Ernestine, telephone opera. I never found those to be particularly funny when I saw them on Laugh-In, and I think they were created. Didn't she bring them to Laugh-In from her?
One woman. No,
she was like working at Troubadour and these other places.
Yeah, I think she was.
I think those characters were like a lot of SNL characters. Uh-huh. These people get cast on these shows and. They have these bits that they do in stand-up. I don't believe those things were created by the writers.
They served her well, obviously.
Yeah, they did serve her well.
George Slatter shot so, obviously, thought so.
All right, so, Bill, this is all you. We're going to talk about the new James Bond film, which comes on demand this week.
Why is it all
bits? Well, you'll see why. And we're all going to chime in on it. He's a Bond freak.
This guy has. I have many.
Okay, then it's all you and then it's all Justine and Bill. But Bill is like collects first edition Ian Fleming novels.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill asks me 6 months in advance. Did you get a screening of the new Bond film? Did you see the trailer yet? I said there's 10 seconds online.
What's the best Bond movie?
The best one?
Yeah.
I still have to go with Goldfinger.
Goldfinger.
Well, do you know what Sean Connery's favorite Bond film is?
Well, and mine too.
Because I interviewed
talked to
him
about it. Yeah, we both.
He said it's From Russia with Love because that's where all the bits of business were created. The little jokes and
the Russians would like to get their hands on the Lecter.
You know. So I'd go. I would go with I would say Goldfinger is my favorite. In the Roger Moore canon, I'd have to go with The Spy Who Loved Me. And then I think
who made more, Roger Moore or Sean Connery?
I think Roger Moore made more.
It was a tie.
That's a tie. Okay.
Trick question.
If you count, never say.
All right. Well,
again.
Let's talk about Spectre, Bill.
Is that supposed to count?
All right. Why don't you talk about Spectre or Justine, since it's your thing? Also, you can talk about it.
All I'm going to say about it, and then Justine can say anything she wants to about how misogynistic it is. I mean, that's Bond. I'm sorry. I'm not going to make any apologies for him. Is that this movie? I think is way better than Skyfall. It has an unbelievable opening in Mexico City.
The opening is great.
Yeah.
And if you know all the films as well as most Bond freaks do. do, you will see probably 30 or 40 little moments in this movie that are dead stolen from earlier shows.
Well,
and I'm talking about
they're
wildly subtle things, like the camera angle or the set of one that looks just like another. In Christoph Waltz's lair, the screens in his evil like den look exactly like Drax's in Moonraker. It's all these little subtle things. So I think for that reason, it rewards the fan, and that's why I'm recommending
all right,
it.
All right.
Well, the formula to me is getting a little tired. Yes, it's the beautiful locales, the globe-trotting thing, you know.
They're never going to change that.
No. Well, of course, as I said on the TV show today, you know, the Broccoli family, I think it's getting tired and it could use a reinvention, but they're never going to do that because this makes $1 billion worldwide. You know, this is the kind of film that appeals to international audiences. There's not a lot of dialogue. The locales are exquisite. The cars are great. The girls are beautiful. It's lushly filmed.
Right.
And the action sequences are extraordinary.
We're not getting Kevin Hart as the little sidekick. We're not getting a wife for Bond shrew.
I think the reinvention was in, which I loved, which was Casino Royale. I mean, that was the reinvention where Daniel Craig did a more, it was like a backstory to Bond.
I completely agree with you. That movie was such a reinvention. I think that's why I didn't enjoy, and I think some people didn't enjoy Spectre so much, because it kind of wiped away a lot of the great things that Casino Royale laid out. You know, with Spectre, you have these great sets. The opening scene, I think, is one of the best in a Bond film. And the direction is incredible. I think it feels like a European art film. And the scenes that linger, they're shot so beautifully.
It's long.
But
it is the longest one
minutes.
Ever.
But, you know, you have this kind of campy paint-by-numbers aspect of it, where it's like, we're going to throw this in, we're going to throw this in. Maybe for the fans, okay, fine. But that doesn't go with this kind of prestige version where these scenes are so long. I will say quickly, because I do have to get into the female aspect of it.
Yeah,
okay?
I have to.
Casino Royale did such a great thing by having Vesper, played by Ava Green, match Bond in terms of wit and intelligence, and she was so integral to the story, you know, helping him defeat some of the villains to a degree, right? They didn't overdo it. She wasn't his wife or anything, as you were saying, but by Skyfall, there was this hugely controversial
moment. But you have a 50-year-old Bond girl in here, the oldest Bond.
Well, we're going to get to that in a second. But in Skyfall, Bérénice Marlowe's character, her ill-fated character that Daniel Craig kind of has this whole scene with her where he's talking about her, the peril she's in because she's in the sex trade. It's quite a gripping, important scene. And then he goes into the shower while she's in there naked and just shows up behind her and everything.
Yes.
And this
my man.
This generated
His name is Bond.
A huge, huge controversy. There were a lot of blogs written about it. There were a lot of articles written about it, not just by, you know, feminist rant blogs, but a lot of people thought, God, like story-wise, narrative-wise, script-wise, that's problematic.
I want to ask you about Lea
not Bond-wise.
Her character.
So in Spectre, when you get to this point where I hope they would learn from the criticism they got, they didn't. You know, you have this scene with Monica Bellucci. Yes, props, because she is 50 years old. But, you know, where, as they say in the Honest Trailer, he borks a widow at her husband's funeral after she's almost murdered, kind of like forces himself on her. To me, that was ridiculous. And I think
he knew she was going to die, though, and he wanted to throw her a bone.
All right, so Bill, what is your favorite Bond?
Doesn't that sort of...
Bill McCuddy, what is your favorite Bond?
I agree with Connery. I like From Russia with Love.
And
by the way, Belushi was 50, and she did look a little old, but she was well lit, so I think it was okay.
Stab you.
Lea Seydoux, her character.
She's...
That was a problem. I had a friend sitting next to me, she's too young. It's Bond. I don't care.
Yeah.
But the character was kind of...
Not as strong as Eva Green. I'll give you that.
It was a waste.
As Vesper.
Of her skill.
Yeah.
And did you speak with...
Did we speak? Daniel Craig spoke, and he did... I have a nice soundbite of him talking about that shot that Bill referred to, that really long tracking shot in Mexico City.
1,000 extras going through makeup and hair every morning in incredible costumes, and each individually done, you know, just beautifully by the Mexican crew. And then the spectacle, and then helicopters flying over, and the whole thing, it's rare. I've never, you know, I've been doing this a while. I've seen quite a lot on these movies, but nothing as grand as that.
And then I have Ben Whishaw talking about being Q again.
I felt relieved that the previous film had been a success and people had sort of accepted me in the role. That was a relief. And so I felt some degree of confidence about going into this one. Yeah.
You know, I kind of have a problem with the Q character. And
I like John Cleese's Q.
He was good.
He was R.
Was he really?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh.
Yeah, but in this one, at least they got Q out into the field. When he made his reappearance in the body of Ben Whishaw. In the first movie, they had a great first scene, remember, in Skyfall, when they meet up.
Right.
And then he spends the rest of the movie behind a computer screen, which I hate in movies when there's
Is anybody seeing Ben in London Spy on BBC America?
No, I've seen
maybe the oddest television program I've ever seen. So just, if you're a fan, send me an email.
So, Bill, as a person, and I know you such a long time, and I know how much you are enamored with these Bond films, are you getting tired? I mean, this is the 24th Bond film.
Yeah, I know where you're going. Look, you're not going to change them. You're
no,
not
but
gonna...
are you personally, when you go there, I mean, you've seen everyone.
No, I watched them as a kid. They're part of my, you know, upbringing. I used to go with my dad. It was a big thing. It's always going to be a big thing for me. I can see the fatigue factor for some audiences. It's just not going to happen for me. It's
right.
just
so you
it's
can
like
watch
a diehard
Kennedy's.
Star Wars. You make 20 more Star Wars movies for the diehard fans. You can do a million more of whatever movie that you love, and if you love it, you won't care.
All right. Before we go, let's talk about the Bill and I were talking about the Super Bowl commercials that had a lot of movie stars. So they had a nod to Ant-Man. They had the Hulk and Ant-Man in a commercial.
Yeah.
where the Hulk wants to drink a can of Coca-Cola and can't open the top, and the Ant-Man. Shrunken down Ant-Man opens the top. There's that one.
Good movie on demand. Rent it.
Yeah, it is a good movie. And then we have the...
Speaking of Paul Rudd, he was in a Bud Light commercial as a cameo with...
Seth Rogen.
One of the more successful, I thought, stars. There were some real mishaps. Anthony Hopkins for TurboTax was just embarrassing. And Helen Mirren for another Bud
Light. I like the TurboTax one. I thought that was funny.
Nah, Steven Tyler for Skittles was ridiculous.
Yeah, that was not good.
But Amy Schumer kind of jumped the shark for me a little by being in a Super Bowl commercial this year. I think it's like she's funny and hip, and the commercial was sort of funny. They did a dick joke where she said, my caucus is fine, our caucus is good. But it wasn't really the sort of thing that I would want Amy Schumer to be in. So I would give that a fail grade.
I like the Steve Harvey commercial. Where he's making fun of himself for reading the wrong envelope.
Right.
This time it's not my fault. It was on the card, and I didn't read the card wrong or something like that. That was kind of funny, you know?
Lot of
what about the Helen Mirren one?
Well, I mentioned that. She was for Budweiser also.
She does a public service announcement, basically,
that Budweiser paid for because they had so many other ads where they were encouraging us to drink in the Super Bowl.
And Peyton Manning's encouraging us.
Yeah, and Peyton Manning said, I mean,
what was that all about? Peyton Manning got, and Colbert did it.
He owns two distributorships.
He claims that he wasn't paid.
Oh, come on.
But, you know, this is your second
Super Bowl ring. Tell them what we're talking about.
Well, instead of saying, I'm going to Disney World, which maybe he also did.
What are you going to do after the game?
What are you going to do? Oh, I'm going to go have a beer. I'm going to have a Budweiser.
But Colbert was showing it on the show Monday night that in three different interviews, he kept saying, I'm going to hang out with my wife and my daughter, and I'm looking forward to a really celebratory evening. I got my Budweiser. Just kept,
how much is this guy worth? He could afford a Stella Artois or a Heineken.
Colbert kept cutting to numerous interviews, and he just kept getting that plug for Budweiser. Right, exactly, Bill. I mean, does the guy really need the money? It's not like, you know, he's starting out in the NFL or something like that. Well, anyway, what are we doing on the show next week? Well, I'm glad I asked.
I never know.
All right.
Thank God
we're going to talk about What are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about a new movie that's coming out on demand called Second Coming with Idris Elba, who many people feel was denied a Academy Award nomination, although he did win the SAG Awards. We're going to talk about some movies that are new to demand, on demand and DVD, one being Trumbo and the other one being with Bryan Cranston, and the other one with Johnny Depp called Black Mass, where he plays Whitey Bulger. Then we're going to
talk... Both Oscar nominated.
And then we're going to talk about... is Black Mass nominated?
No, he is, though.
Okay. And then we're going to talk about... what else are we going to talk about?
Black History Month. We're going to talk about the good and bad on that list, actually.
That's true. Of what's on demand, they put some good movies on there and some movies that you might not be thrilled with as well. And
as Connery would say, there's a few stinkers.
There you go. So that's what we're talking about next week on the show. So thank you, Justine Browning, for joining us this week.
Of course. I hope you appreciated my feminist rant.
There you go. You rant about anything.
We're
going to
cut
want.
Most of them out, but yeah, thanks.
At least I got to do it for me.
Justine will be sitting in on Talking Pictures, the television show, the week of March 1st, which will air on March 6th. And thank you, Bill Bregoli, as usual. And thank you, Bill McCuddy. And thank you for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll see you, hear you, whatever. You'll listen to us next week. Thanks.